Okay, welcome back. I continue to watch the unfolding of the genocide. And it's a question of being patient. It's a question of really doing a lot of research and a lot of reading, which Erica does every day. I just, if I had the time, I might even consider it, but I don't think I could do it. She's got the mind, she's got the brain, she's got the science. And what you get on this program from both of us is the best we can possibly do. And there's no games here. We're not making money on anything. We're not hustling this. We don't put our names on various and sundry protocols. We're here to try to bring you the information, whether you're vaxxed or not, that will help you, to the best of our ability, live a better, healthier, more sane life. What we're all involved with here is crazy. It's nuts. And there are so many ways that this horrible weapon, whoever, and I don't, again, I'm speaking for me, I don't leave out the possibility that there was help designing this thing. It's too insidious. It's really, it's so thorough what it does. It's astonishing. Now here's something I want you to do. Get ready. Don't look at it yet, but in a minute or so, I want to go and look at a video with you. And it should be under our name in guests. And let's see if it is. It should be there. I have to pull up another window here. Oh, hello. You've been sitting there all this time? So quiet. So dainty. With that little French apron on. It's so nice. All right, let me see here. Video, yes, it's there. All right, look for Jeff and Erica and guests, and we're going to go there in a minute or two and look at a video together. It's not very long. I just want you to see this because it underscores what we've been saying here for 3 years. I don't know how long. It's crazy. A long time. Now, the latest is, and I'll have this story up in headlines momentarily, the bad news about how the COVID bioweapon virus, which is what the COVID virus is, it's a bioweapon, now is known, and this is NIH data, to remain in cells in your tongue and your taste buds for a year and a half minimum after you're infected. Got it? You get COVID, and many people have had it. David Oates most recently was knocked on his butt for he wasn't over it for 2.5 months, and he was out of it for weeks. He was in bed, down, and many of you know this. It's not a little cold that comes and goes like they tried to make us think in the beginning. So the NIH has found out that the COVID bioweapon virus stays in your tongue and your taste buds. It's small, but it's still there, and it's findable after a year and a half. Think oral transmission? Got it? That's a possibility. We've talked about this whole shedding thing forever, and yes, you can shed the virus. Now the virus apparently will live in your mouth to one degree or another for a year and a half. So have a good time. All right. I like that apron. That is nice. Go ahead.
I don't wear an apron.
All right. No, Erica would be the last one to wear an apron. Maybe a riding crop, but that's another story. All right. No more laughter. I try and lighten this up a little bit. So what about the virus hanging out? Like the herpes virus does in the body forever, basically. So now they're finding out that the COVID virus is still there and identifiable after a year and a half. Not a big surprise to us, but not good news.
Well, they've long suspected that there are reservoirs of virus post-infection, particularly in, I believe, the testicles, because they are what we call immune privileged. So that's a convenient place for a virus to hang out and be undetected. And apparently there's other places.
Now that you mentioned that, let's quickly toss in Dr. Arnie Burkhardt's work, which showed that there were, upon autopsy, no evidence, as in zero evidence, of any spermatozoa remaining.
That was from the vaccine.
We're shifting gears a little here, but the point is that vaccine, talk about a sterilizing agent for men and women, no spermatozoa left, only spike protein. That's crazy. All right, back to the virus aspect of this. Herpes, it's always there. It walls itself off.
Well, because the herpes, they can go into a latent phase and evade immune detection, and the nerves, and several of those herpes viruses take up residence in the nerves. And when
they
awaken,
the nerves,
you know it.
Those viruses, yeah. I don't think there was any mention in there of any longer term than a year and a half, but that's long enough. If there's still residual virus there after a year and a half, why not 3 years, 5 years? Who knows?
Well, it's evolving story. You know, as we collect the data, we'll know more. It's tempting to make assumptions about this thing that, you know, once you're over the clinical symptoms, then the infection is gone. But is it really?
Is it really? Boy, is that the right way to sum it up? Okay, now, we have spent years describing blood clots for you. There are two types now in the age of COVID. One is a normal, jellied, kind of a blood, as in blood, clot, which can be dissolved. Heparin is very commonly used. And the other one is a clot, but it has nothing to do with blood clots, really. It's a proteinaceous, fibrous, whitish, gristle-like meat in your veins and in your arteries. And just to backstep a little bit, we had that picture, I don't know, it was not long ago, a couple months, maybe three, I don't know, of blood. I believe it was a Dartfield picture of a blood sample. And in the blood of someone who was vaxxed were these little white floating, obviously floating in blood, but little white dots. And they were identified as being spike protein clot seedlings. That was my term, seedlings. And they apparently grow. That's how they begin. They're small. They'll go through a vein or an artery, and they'll bump up against the endothelial wall, and they'll get stuck there, or they'll, who knows, maybe they've got little hooks. I don't know. But they begin to grow inside of veins and arteries. And this is not a joke. And I want you to cue this video up, and we're going to take a look at that in a minute. So you got two kinds of blood clots. If they're treating you for an amyloid clot with heparin, they're just running up the bill. It's not going to do you any good. None. So, all right. So go to guests, and let's get this video ready, and then we're all going to kind of look at it together. It's right there. Video of surgical removal of white amyloid clots. Thanks to John O'Looney for posting this. Go ahead and click and bring it up. It's an X video, and we'll kind of count it down here. It looks like it's going to play on its own anyway, but start it at the beginning, and we'll let it go here. 3, 2, 1. All right, let's look.
COVID and then the booster vaccination.
Okay, this person had COVID and the booster.
I think before we give any boosters, we need to check the antibody for the patient, because I think that booster causes vasculitis for the patient with the previous infection. Let's show exactly what's going to be in this guy's neck. Remember, the other side, we couldn't do anything because it's totally occluded. And we're seeing this so often now that we don't understand.
He went to the other side, he said, and he couldn't do anything. Now, this, I believe, is a carotid artery, goes to the brain. And if you look at that, that white gristle in there. How could any blood still be moving to the brain through that? I don't get it. But the doctor, you can hear him talking. So I'm going to start this again here, right where it was.
I think that COVID and COVID vaccination have to be a risk factor for cardiovascular disease.
COVID and the COVID vaccination have to be a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. Amen.
Now look at this. This was going to the brain of the patient. Nothing will dissolve this TPA or anything like this. Look to the other plaque. So definitely there's some.
Nothing will dissolve this or anything like this. Nothing. And he is 100% correct. Heparin, nothing will dissolve that stuff. It's like gristle. It's like a tendon. People like to call it squid, calamari. Whatever is your pleasure, it doesn't matter. And this happens to be in the carotid artery. And remember, arteries take blood from the heart. Veins return blood to the heart. Always try and remember it that way. So this was going to the guy's brain. And they knocked him out and they took this thing out. The question that immediately comes to mind and should come to mind is how many other veins and arteries have blockages like this already building and growing? How many other amyloid clots are beginning to grow throughout this person's body? I don't mean to sound negative, but I'm telling it straight. You can't say, oh, it's just this one spot, nowhere else. It's kind of like saying, well, you just have this one little cancerous tumor. Don't worry, it's nowhere else. BS. It can be anywhere. It's bloodborne. And that picture of the blood with those little white amyloid seedlings looking for a place to put down roots and start to grow should scare the hell out of people. Look, we've been set up by whoever did this, and I think we know basically who did it. A certain group of people wants to run the planet, so they've taken action to try to reduce the planetary population to make their dominance and hegemony complete, easily complete. So this is a bad, bad piece of video. We've seen similar. We've seen clots taken out of people's legs that are 2 feet long.
I know it.
So this is just one more example. But now where, all right, we have to think, don't we, that this kind of amyloid clot formation could be going on in who knows how many different locations in that person's body, in anyone's body who's been injected, for that matter. We can't rule that out, can we?
Well, at the very least, the microclotting is occurring at the capillary level, and that's devastating in and of itself. You know, all these vital organs are being starved of oxygen.
From the blood, and what kind of blood is it? Is it that nice cherry red liquid blood in the vaxxed? No.
No, not typically.
It's dark blue, black sludge, or mud blood, as some call it. Mm-hmm. We call it sludge blood.
Yeah, it's very
thick. And your poor heart is trying to push this mass of quasi-liquid around your body. And no wonder the hearts are just giving up. It's all by design. They wanted this to happen. Whoever did this was Satan's own. It's so evil. There's so many different ways that this will end life or severely damage it to the extent that we have so many people now talking about suicide. They want out. I don't want this body anymore.
Yeah.
I read
that every day in some of these groups. I mean, you know, particularly the tinnitus group, and those people have had it.
How can you live with that kind of high-pitched ringing in the ears.
You can't do anything. You literally can't do anything.
No, you're held captive by this awful high-pitched sound in your mind, in your head, in your brain, and you can't do anything about it. Nothing. And so after a while, you don't sleep, you don't rest, and you just get to the point where you say, to hell with it. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. And after these 4 years, no one's been able to figure out how to address it. Can't happen.
Well, first of all, they denied that it even happened, so you lost time right there.
Don't forget that. The lies that have paved the road to misery from our own elected officials, well, appointed officials, selected officials, have been beyond measure evil, horrible. We don't have a government here anymore. We have a dominating communist, Bolshevik, Zionist, oppressive cabal, a regime, whatever you want to call it. It's nothing to do with representing the people. There might be a handful, 6 or 7, 8 people left in Congress who are worth the time of day, if that. So anyhow, look at that video. And I don't, please, don't do this. Hold on. It's playing again on its own. It does that here. I want you to not think, oh, my God, I'm dying. Oh, my God, I've got clots everywhere like this. We don't know that. And we don't want to suggest that that's the case. We want to suggest that it happens in some people. It is a possibility, and it needs to be paid attention to.
Yeah, I would say just be aware of it. And it does seem to be some combination of having had the virus along with the spike from the injection, whether you got it by shedding or you are injected with this material and are generating it internally.
I wish I knew of a way to give people who have been injected or spiked by the virus hope. We would be a rich team here in no time if we could do that. Now, that doesn't mean that there may not be things discovered like fenbendazole. There's one right there now that's giving hope to people with cancer. Is it working every time? No. Is it working miracles in some cases? Apparently, yes. We've talked about that quite a bit. And then there's the horse paste, too, if you can't get the pills.
Well, there's a long list of it. If you are able to get to a doctor that knows something,
no.
A functional medical doctor that can evaluate
NAD.
You as a whole person and take a proper history of prior exposures, current state of health, you're much better off. If you go through the conventional medical system, you're wasting your time.
Literally. And your
you
money.
Are. And your money.
Literally wasting your time. How many times have we reported to you, have we read accounts, I had every test and they all came back negative. They can't tell me what's wrong. And these people are
gravely
injured.
Yeah, and a lot of this damage is not going to show up on scans. You know, you can do your MRIs and your CT scans and all of that, and they'll come back clear. And typically, they're subradiographic. This type of damage doesn't show up until quite a bit of damage has been done.
And we don't have an over-the-counter test for spike. You'd think at this point you could do a simple little blood test at home.
Well, there's one.
There's the one from
Dr. Bruce Patterson's lab called InCell DX, He's still the only one. He looks for the spike protein in monocytes. Those are your circulating white blood cells. Not everybody has spike in their circulating white blood cells, which is,
that's
encouraging.
Though. Right.
Yeah, well, that doesn't mean it isn't present in other tissues, but they don't have circulating spike in their white blood cells. So that's,
right.
I guess, a plus in some cases, but it's not definitive in terms of, whether or not there could be spike elsewhere. And then there's the spike antibody test. And
now we
that's,
have, yeah, go ahead.
You know, that's an indirect measurement, a surrogate measurement of what, you know, we can presume your exposure to spike is, whether it's from internally generated spike or shedding.
It's kind of like a rebound test.
And it's interesting that a number of people, our friend Lori being one of them, who had the bad shedding experience from the car ride, she's been tested now 3 or 4 times for spike antibodies, and they've been negative every time. And yet she still suffers from headache and bleeding abnormalities and numbness and tingling in her hands when she wakes up in the morning. And there are other people that also have been tested for spike antibody that are not, they don't show the antibodies. Now, that could be, these people may be the ones that have an HLA, human leukocyte antigen, gene that doesn't form antibodies to biotoxins. And that's about 24-25% of the population. And these
what
are the same people
that
are...
What if they built that into this bioweapon phalanx? What if they built that in there?
They could have. Yeah, I mean, that would be, you know, when you're looking at HLA subtypes, I mean, that determines how your immune system responds to a pathogen. And we know that people with a certain HLA gene, the HLA-DR gene, it's called the biotoxin gene, they have defective antigen presentation, so they are not able to generate antibodies to biotoxins. And so in these cases, and these are, I would say, if we take Lori for an example, the response of the body is just overwhelming inflammation because it can't finish the job. So it has a very broad way of dealing with an assault, and just right. Everything becomes inflamed.
Not
it becomes
good.
A very broad innate immune response. So you get the inflammation and the swelling and just all the unpleasant symptoms, and you can't even finish the job. So
many
if I
angles.
Was somebody in that situation, I would probably opt to get tested to see if I'm one of these people that has the biotoxin gene, and that's why I cannot clear this toxin.
Okay. There's a hot ticket item running all over the internet now, and people are talking about this may be the magic bullet. This may be it could be the cure-all. I don't know how to phrase it. What word is being used out there now?
Oh, well, I guess the antidote.
It is a word we try to stay away from.
Everybody thinks there's some secret antidote to this that they came up with and they're holding out on. And
I personally believe that there probably is. I know we're never going to see it. I know they wouldn't turn something
when
loose.
When you consider
the
broad cascade of problems that ensue from this, mm-hmm. I don't believe there's a single antidote.
Can't be. It could be a family of things that will subjugate.
Well,
this.
I think we've the best we can offer that we have access to is ivermectin. That has been life changing for people.
It is a miraculous product.
And it's one of the things they've tried to take away from people.
Natokinase, serapeptase, NAC, they're the usual. There's a handful that people should be taking in this day and age. Yes, that's good. All right, here's a little bit of a video, around 90 seconds worth. Spike protein can be eradicated from the body, according to a new study. This is Dr. Peter McCullough, who's going to be speaking about this, and we'll just play a little bit of it here.
Okay. In the research studies that measured the spike protein, it's still in blood 6 months after the shot, maybe years after the shot. So we're working to handle the spike protein the best we can with McCullough protocol-based spike protein detoxification, and now we've published an idea, a proposal, that potentially we could use what's considered small interfering messenger RNA to bind to Pfizer or Moderna and basically deactivate it so the body can clear it out We use these small interfering RNAs already in practice. There's one called Petirasan, the other one Inclinzeran. I use them in my practice. They only last in the body a few days. They bind up messenger RNA to inactivate it. And then there's another technology called Ribotech, which can actually just sandwich the messenger RNA. So we hope that some basically molecular technology companies can pick this up and consider this. We're going to need an off switch for this. We now, Moderna has their messenger RNA respiratory syncytial virus approved. They have influenza vaccines.
I think he kind of misspoke there. Moderna has its messenger RNA respiratory syncytial virus approved. That was kind of a misspeak. Yeah, I think he meant to say a vaccine for that, not that they had created a virus.
True.
I think, if you were listening carefully. Okay.
Proved. And without any way to turn off the messenger RNA, we think every single messenger RNA shot, because it's been made synthetic and resistant to human breakdown, is going to make people progressively sick. We have to get a way, find a way to get this out of the body.
Okay, so what is the antidote du jour that you're hearing about and reading about? What are people talking about? This is, we need to clear this up a little bit, or at least bring it into focus for everybody.
Well, what he's talking about is not a new concept. It's called antisense therapy, where what they do is they make a complementary strand of RNA that will be the opposite of the RNA that is being translated. And when it's injected, when it meets up with this piece of RNA that's about to be translated, it locks onto it and prevents it from being translated. And it is a therapy that's been in use for a number of years. Actually, the Lyme disease community has used this type of therapy rather successfully for about 20 years, mostly in Europe, but it's starting to be used quite a bit more here now, with somewhat remarkable success, I would say. But you don't hear a lot about it. The company that is engaged in the therapy or producing the antisense nucleotides for it is in Greece, called RGCC, and they've done quite a bit of research on it. And the people that have had it for Lyme disease really report remarkable success with it. And it's also been developed for a variety of viral infections, including EBV, cytomegalovirus, chickenpox. It's kind of a shame it isn't used more here. And then from the pharmaceutical side, there's three that are currently in use. There's the two that he mentioned, Patisiran, which is for amyloidosis, Inclisiran, which is for genetically high cholesterol, and then the third one is actually for porphyria, called Givlaari. And I know from the people who have been on the Givlaari for about 3 years now, they too are reporting remarkable success. I mean, there's a handful of people that where the therapy doesn't really agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
It may
What's
have to
cost?
Do with...
cost of this therapy?
Funny
it's
you should ask.
Not pocket change.
Well, I will tell you that the SOT... That's the SOT therapy for Lyme disease and Lyme co-infections and these other viral diseases that was is being done in Greece. It's actually a modest fee. One woman I know who had it done, it was about $4,000, and it was curative in her case, absolutely curative. And she, you know, young girl, so it was remarkable that, you know, she can recover her life now. But this Patisiran, which is the one for amyloidosis, and the Givlaari for porphyria, they are approximately $500,000 a year.
Now, does that sound like the behavior of an advanced, enlightened country to allow that to happen? Does those people care about human life?
Here's my objection. Here's my objection to what's being proposed by McCullough. I mean, it's the proof of concept is there. Yes, it's a valid therapy, but I mean, we're talking about trying to correct something that was injected that didn't have consistency. You know, what was the translation fidelity of these mRNA vaccines? It wasn't very much, 55% maybe, and the other 45% was junk proteins. So now you want to negate what you've done. If it's going to work, it's a long way off. That's all I can say.
All right.
Do you trust the same people that poisoned you to begin with?
I don't think so.
You want to be a guinea pig again?
I don't. Here's just a little bit more of McCullough, who has ascended to near the top of the heap from his humble beginnings. All right, here we go.
We knew that messenger RNA was a bad idea. I published an op-ed in The Hill in August of 2020, the only public figure to come out and basically say big time to the House, the Senate, and the White House that messenger RNA was a bad idea because we don't know how to get rid of the pseudouridinated messenger RNA once it's in the body. It appears to be somewhat resistant to ribonucleases. A paper by Castriuta and colleagues has demonstrated that it's circulatory in blood for at least 28 days, if not more. Rolkin and colleagues from Stanford showed messenger RNA is stuck in lymph nodes around the axilla and the breast area for at least 2 months. Now we're years into this, Alex, and we see spike protein circulating at high levels, and we infer that from the extended antibody against the spike protein. Soon we'll be able to directly measure it.
Okay, soon we'll be able to directly measure it. Eventually it'll probably make its way to over-the-counter status, but that's not going to happen anytime soon.
I almost feel like they're dangling this in front of people.
It does sound
like
just
to keep
yes,
hope
it's
alive.
A tease. It's
yeah,
a tease.
A tease, exactly. Exactly. I mean, this is a long way off, if it's even going to be successful.
If. We don't know.
We're still talking about a lipid nanoparticle delivery system. You want to be talked about with lipid nanoparticles again?
So here we go. If they come up with this technology, it has to be delivered with a liquid nanoparticle envelope, which is toxic, possibly oncogenic. Probably oncogenic.
Yeah.
So that's the other side of your body. Good luck.
You know, when we're talking about these genetic diseases that they have these patented drugs for now, the patisiran for amyloidosis, the inclisiran for the cholesterol, and the Givlaari for porphyria, you know, it's a risk-benefit analysis. I mean, these people are typically suffering to the point, I wouldn't say the cholesterol people necessarily, there's other ways of dealing with that. But, you know, if you've suffered with porphyria or amyloidosis, hey, what's a few lipid nanoparticles every couple of months, right? So that you have to look at it that way. These people feel that the risk
they're going to get you
or the benefits
or going.
Outweigh the risk.
They knew about liquid nanoparticle toxicity from the beginning. They knew all this.
Well, they're trying to refine it. You know, clearly some are more toxic than others. I think they are trying to reduce the toxicity.
Well, one would hope so. All right. I think we're ready to move on here a little bit. We've got a lot of really good information to bring you from our Chronicles files about real people fighting this. And I guess, again, the overview, and you watch this all the time, is that there's no trend out there that is suggesting that people are getting better. They're still struggling and getting tired, and they're getting more run down. And there just aren't many positive things. That's why something like this is going to get a lot of instant traction. It's got a lot of pop and sizzle and sounds like hope. And if there's one aspect of this horrible COVID genocide, is it how it takes hope away from people. It really does. It's terrible. So
Yeah.
All right. Anything else that we
missed? No.
I've missed. Okay. Nope. Oh, did you want to play any of the Still Wagon thing? I've got that here. We can play a couple minutes of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, we could.
All right. Let me bring it up. Okay. Kevin Stillwagon, former Delta airline commercial captain, chiropractor, now almost universally respected authority on this whole nightmare, this whole COVID genocidal nightmare. Here he's talking about aviation. Now, he was a captain, remember that, and he knows the game. And he's talking about the terrible DEI decimation of what used to be a very high level of professional competence. And now it's not there, and he's worried.
Are you willing to get a high-grade CD?
Hold on, we got to get through the commercial here. Stillwagon is always, I've never seen a video of him where he's not worth listening to.
Yeah, he definitely knows his stuff.
Yeah. And very, very personable. He doesn't speak down to anyone. All right, here we go.
Unfortunately, we're in a situation today where some airlines are so needing pilots that they're putting these accelerated programs together where, you know, people can pay a whole lot of money and get put into an accelerated track.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they find themselves in the cockpit of a passenger carrying aircraft. And as a captain, I got to fly with a couple of these people and evaluate them. And I want to tell you, Brett, it was not pretty. These people, although they had the technical skills, you know, they could program the aircraft to fly from point A to point B, and, you know, they understood all of the technology. When it came down to basic seat-of-the-pants flying, they didn't have those skills.
How many of you knew all that was happening in commercial aviation? Hey, everyone. Our country is at a severe inflection point in the aviation industry and also in the culture itself. We take the wrong turn and the consequences may be unrecoverable. We maintain aircraft control, analyze the situation, and take the proper action, and we can recover this unusual attitude. Aviators, you know what I mean.
You know, there have been a few airline executives over the years that truly think that it's safe to have pilots that are basically trained to proficiency, and they will try to cut costs and cut safety measures, do anything they can for the bottom line, just the bottom line of the airline, for the airline to be profitable and make a lot of money, thinking that, you know, we can basically put anybody up there that's willing to go there. And again, this is not where we need to be. You want those crew members up front to be as highly trained and as experienced as they can possibly be. And, you know, you get that experience like I did and like you did. You go through what's called paying your dues, and you gain the experience. And these are the things that you carry with you through the rest of your career, and that helped you to become.
I think you're right too, because I flew. I think I flew for over 20 years as an Air Force pilot before I got into the airlines. And you're absolutely right. It's easy enough going through a syllabus to develop the technical skills that you need. You know, can I program the FMS? Can I make the heads-up display work? Can I make all of this stuff in front of me and all these buttons overhead? Do I know what they all do? Yeah, sure. But then when it comes to the judgment that years of experience brings, that's where it's tough. And I think, too, that's where one of the responsibilities of being a flight instructor, because in the military and also in the civilian world, I was a flight instructor like you for forever. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we try to do for our students is kind of pour some of our own experience into them because it's going to take them a while to gain it. So anything you can do to help is going to be a big deal to get them up to speed. I actually did the same thing as you did, flying.
Okay, you get the idea. The American civil aviation industry is in trouble. It's just a matter of time before we start seeing planes go down, crash through human error. What these gentlemen are talking about is the minimizing of human error through hands-on experience, as in years and years of experience, things that aren't addressed by buttons, computer screens, gauges, etc. These are human things. That's what makes a truly competent pilot. Pilot error has caused a lot of crashes. You don't hear about it very much, but it has. Pilot makes a mistake, you only get one chance. You rarely get a second. And it's
over. It was just, did you get that story I sent you on the,
yes,
the pilot in
Go
Egypt?
Ahead. Yeah, 41 years old, I think, was it? Something like that?
Yeah.
Egyptian
died
airline
on the job,
pilots.
Right?
Died right in the cockpit.
Yep.
Crazy. Okay, let's go take a look at our human files here. And we have some left from last time. Possible CJD.
Did we do that?
No. We might have done the first one, but I don't think so. I think it was too long. So why don't you go ahead with that? Start with number one.
Okay.
I'm a 40-year-old female.
Got it. I am a 40-year-old female in Alabama and had an emergency surgery last March 2023 for an ovarian torsion where I developed sepsis. I did okay for a bit, and then doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. I ended up with antibiotics and a PICC line for several months, but my symptoms didn't make sense and still don't. As a last-ditch effort, my doctor recommended a private health facility in Birmingham that focuses on functional medicine for their specialized testing. Unfortunately, in the fall 2023, they called, panicked, that I had tested positive on their test for the protein for chronic wasting disease. And in parentheses, she puts CJD. Now, those are two different diseases, but prion diseases nonetheless.
Right.
Shortly after that, I was diagnosed with stage 3 diastolic heart failure over a weekend in November. I went from walking 4 miles to not being able to walk at all. I have since gained some strength and can walk, and I'm not wheelchair-bound or walker-bound anymore. Since then, I have been in and out of the hospital. My electrolytes won't stay regulated. Even the best of the best can't figure out why I have extreme heart failure. I continue to have extreme weakness, trouble with coordination, dizziness, memory, trouble forming the right words. They don't come out right. That started this week. After a long talk multiple times with my neurologist and negative results for other tests that would cause my symptoms, they are very concerned. I will have an EEG to see if they can pick up the CJD on Thursday. Has anyone ever had loved ones with similar course? Has anyone had testing that picked up the protein on non-standardized medical tests? My regular doctors originally blew it off and called it quackery, since the testing wasn't done at a public facility and was done by integrative health doctors. I am posting anonymously since this is a public group. I don't want to freak out friends and family. We've been through enough already. Thank you for your help, and I'm incredibly sorry that there have to be groups like this. You each have my prayers and love.
So she's waiting to find out if she has prion brain death, is what she's waiting to find out.
Yeah, so...
Not a good position to be in.
You want to continue? So the first question, and it should be the first question.
Did you get... Yes.
Yeah.
Did you get
any of the C19 injectables? And someone in the group answers, there is a correlation with COVID-19 infection, but so far I haven't heard of any with the vaccine. Well, where have you been?
Wait, what planet? Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, that research, I mean, that seminal research from Luc Montagnier and Jean-Claude Perez about the 26 cases of rapid onset CJD really hasn't made it to the mainstream.
That's a shame.
Much less in any of these support groups.
No, it's been swept away. They don't want to do it.
You know, and there have been a whole bunch more since then. I mean, that study was published in, what, late 2022? Was it early 2022?
I'd say it's sometime in 2022, but I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
That was important, very important. All right, I don't think the next one is real important. I'll jump down to shingles and cancer. I had shingles a few years ago. I don't think we did this one.
No, we haven't. The shingles is just...
Go ahead.
It's off the charts now. You cannot believe how many people are suffering.
Really?
You know, these are not mild cases. These are pretty severe.
Well, some of the pictures you've sent are horrific,
mm-hmm.
horrible. The entire lower half of someone's body, one leg,
yep.
hip, back, completely covered with severe shingles lesions. Awful, painful. Remember, this is basically invasive of the neurology in the skin right there. So it's sending pain signals constantly to the brain. I had shingles a few years ago in my mid-30s. It developed in the middle of my lower back. A couple of months later, I started spotting between periods. Very uncommon for me, so I went to a gynecologist. Gynecologist couldn't find the issue. And I went back and forth with him over the years. Fast forward to now, and I have endometrial cancer. I don't meet any of the risk factors. I've researched that a few different things can work together to cause a cell to change its DNA, and I'm really starting to believe that the shingles was part of it. There are other viruses that cause cancer as well. Has anyone ever done research in this field? And there's one comment to that. This is my first bout with shingles. I'm 72. I'm in the eighth week now and having the worst time. I've read that the reverse is true. Cancer patients are more likely to get it. You had a shingles episode a while back. I'm so sorry you're having to deal with this. Have you caught the cancer early? I know this cancer is curable and treatable. My daughter, 50, caught her endometrial cancer too late, and we lost her this last January. There's a history of endometriosis that runs through my late mom to me, my granddaughters, and my daughter. I'm sending you hugs and support and wish you very well. Okay.
Well, you know, how many shots?
It's people, a lot of them, and what Eric is saying is that even at this point, people just don't entertain the idea that they might have made a fatal decision.
That's right. These shots are just profoundly immune suppressive. And even the material that's being shed, whether it's spike protein and microRNAs and messenger RNA, there are things in that that do a number on, you know, a bystander's immune system. You know, how many people, unvaxxed people, who were in the proximity of the vaxxed, ended up getting shingles? Countless. And they still are. You know, there's people right now.
You wouldn't be talking about shedding, would you?
Yeah, you know, it is shedding.
Of course it is.
People right now, they literally cannot be around the vaxxed, or else their shingles comes back immediately.
Does that tell you, all of you out there, anything more about the rapidity, almost instantaneous transmission of proteins from the vaxxed to the unvaxxed? It should. A simple inhalation. That's why masks are not to be dismissed.
Well, like Stephanie Sinef said, you know, from that paper that she gleaned this information from, there are microRNAs that are showing up in these exosomes as well that have immune suppressive effects.
That's very
now, remember,
scary. Very scary.
We had that paper that was pulled back in 2021, I think it was, about that mystery URA 3665.
That's right.
That was hidden in the vaccines and was having effects, adverse effects on the unvaxxed. And I would suspect that that URA 3665 is some microRNA that targets probably one of the interferon regulatory proteins and is taking it offline and allowing these herpes viruses to reactivate.
Good guess.
And shingles is a herpes virus.
All right, one more. We've got a little bit of time. Here's a Harry Fisher, the paramedic, post. I was called to a near syncopal episode. That's a heart attack, right?
No, syncopal. Syncopal, fainting.
What is it?
Syncopal.
What is it, though?
Fainting.
Passing out. Oh, fainting. Out. Oh, okay. I missed the F on fainting there. Meaning somebody almost passed out. Arrived on the scene to find a fit and otherwise healthy man, diaphoretic, sweating, saying, "I don't know what happened." He went on to say, "I was about to stand up to get something and my stomach started hurting. I felt dizzy and almost fell down. I placed my monitor, checked vitals, acquired an EKG." This is Harry talking. He was still complaining of slight abdominal pain. After some conversation, he finally agreed to transport with me to the hospital. During my medical history assessment, he denied taking any medications, has no pertinent past medical history, has received 3 COVID vaccinations, as in 1, 2, 3, 1, 2 and a booster, all Pfizer. We had good conversation about his family and his little kids that are his entire world. The next time I saw this man, months later, 9/11 call for weakness and nausea, same man. He was a fraction of the man I initially met. He could barely speak. The first call that I ran with him proved to be an aortic dissection. He survived the surgery, though it took a major toll on his body. Go ahead.
Now, with his children around him, they watched as my partner and I transferred their frail father onto my cot. That was the last time they saw their dad alive. I want to say happy Father's Day today. I want to be happy, and I am grateful for the good left in the world, but I know so many have been robbed of their loved ones. Prior to the vaccines, aortic dissection and aneurysms were very, very rare. After the experimental shots, they were not rare anymore. Hold your loved ones close. Show love often. Stand firm in the face of evil. Shout righteousness from the rooftops. And be a voice for the voiceless. God bless.
After, he writes, after the experimental shots, they weren't rare anymore. Well, I think he's being careful. He doesn't want to get fired, and I don't blame him. He knows these weren't experimental shots. He's got to at this point. They're deployed, perfected, created, and built biological weapons. That's what they are. That's all they are. Nothing else. Okay, that's about it, I guess. Anything else there?
No, that should do it.
All right. Have fun. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
And we'll be right back with another hour. Stay with us.